listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back once again to the Tennis.com podcast. I'm Ed McGrogan here with Steve Tigner. It is time to get caught up on the last official tournament of the year, the ATP World Tour Finals, of course, on the men's side. And I have to say, the draws seem to come out quite early for an event that's still pretty much a week away, but we had the draws revealed on Monday. Group A, if you didn't see, is led by Djokovic, then comes Berdic, Cilic, and Wawrinka. Group B, led by Federer, the number two, followed by Nishikori, Raonic, and Murray. You know, Murray obviously the one where you really want to see where he ends up in the draw. And I guess from that point, Steve, I'll kind of give it to you. You know, I think it perhaps seems obvious, but is there any doubt in your mind, you know, what is the stronger group of the two?
You're right to mention that they did the draws early. This is the first time in a few years that there's been a break between this tournament in London and the last tournament in Paris. So I guess
that's right. Yep.
They didn't really know what to do. I mean, you know, they want to build up, you know, they always want to build up this tournament and get the guys to London as quickly as possible and do as much as they can promo-wise. But, you know, maybe they started it a little early this week because now we know. But now we know what the draw is.
It's not exactly like the NCAA tournament where you really have a lot to digest after a draw. I'll put it that way.
Right. I would say Djokovic got a little better draw here. He has a good record against all of these guys he plays. I think it's something like 41-5 against Wawrinka, Berdych, and Cilic. Federer's record obviously is good against Nishikori, Murray, and Raonic, but you know, you look at Murray as the best of the, as you know, historically I'd say the third best player in the tournament, and you look at Raonic as a dangerous guy who just beat Federer last week, and you look at Wawrinka, who hasn't, you know, really been playing well. So I think Djokovic coming off the win in Paris, he can see the number one ranking. You know, if he goes undefeated in his group, he can secure the number one ranking. That's a big incentive for him to beat each of these guys. You know, so I think you have to start out liking his chances.
Yeah, both group. I mean, I certainly agree with you there. Where it all shook out, you know, like you and I said, Berdic does seem kind of the odd guy out. You know, odd guy out only in respect that, you know, we've seen his story. We've seen that movie a lot of times before where, super consistent, gets there. I think this is 5 years in a row now. But you can't certainly go out on a limb and say, you know, this is Thomas Berdych's time at the ATP World Finals. I don't think anyone's going out to say that there. The groups, to me, actually break down somewhat interesting in their composition where in Group A you get both the first-time slam winners of 2014, Cilic and Wawrinka. As you say, Wawrinka, you know, really has kind of tailed off since the Open, and I think you could even say a little bit before that. Cilic, of course, he wins the Open. We haven't seen, you know, he didn't play Paris, I think Cilic is certainly probably one of the most interesting players to watch at this event because, you know, it's so fresh in mind how utterly great he was at the Open, and you would think that his tennis would translate very well, you know, to indoors as well. I mean, he's got titles in that surface. So, you know, Group A, if we want to start with that, I think beyond Djokovic, there is a lot to look forward to in the Cilic part of things.
Yeah, I think you start with Wawrinka. I think he's shown this year that, you know, when you win your first Grand Slam at 28, that, you know, the downside of that is it's almost too late to become a different player. You know, he won a Grand Slam, but then for the rest of the year, he pretty much went back to what he's done in the past, a guy who can win big matches, but also will go on losing streaks, and that's where he is right now. I think the big thing you look for him now is can he get his game, get some confidence going for the Davis Cup? I think that's, which, you know, he's sort of the key for Switzerland the following week. That'll be on a different surface, a totally different scene, but I think that alone should be some motivation for him. And I agree that Cilic is an interesting story. He's more of a guy, a little younger than Wawrinka, a guy who won his first Grand Slam. You know, maybe he can become something a little different. Maybe he has time to grow into a consistent winner. And I would think the, you know, the London would be the perfect place for him with his new serve, the bomb serve that he showed at the Open. And I think this will be an interesting test to see whether, he won a Grand Slam. Now what can he do against when he has to play all the top guys, the whole time?
Yeah, just hypothetically, I mean, if you think, if you think ahead and say that Cilic ended up winning an event like this, think about how we would perceive him going into 2015 and, of course, just how he is now. I mean, I think, that would be pretty much one of the biggest stories going into the, absolutely truncated offseason of tennis, that, of where Marin Cilic stands among everyone. And that, that's certainly going to be a very, very tall order, but just kind of thinking beyond Djokovic, because Djokovic does, he looking good is always, particularly in the indoor season, the fall season, where he's really racked up wins for almost the past 5 years, I would say. And, it would be remiss not to really end with Djokovic, because we didn't really get a chance to mention how he played in Paris. And it turned out to be, I think you had a good point about Djokovic's run this year and how it's very different, of course, than his run to number one back in 2011 and some of his other campaigns where, it was a clear-cut display of excellence by Djokovic. We haven't always seen that at times this year. You remember some of the losses as well as some of the wins, even though he has, a really impressive resume from 2014.
Yeah, it's kind of been the opposite of 2011, like you said. He's been really up and down. Just when you think he might be declining a little, then he dominates. And just when you think he's going to keep dominating, he loses. That's been his season. Right now he's on an upswing. What that means for this week, we'll see. He got better through the week in Paris, and really, his last few matches he really played some of his best tennis. At the moment, I would expect him to go 3-0 in this tournament with the motivation that he can just wrap up number one without ever having to play Federer or Murray. That's got to be something he's thinking about. But, and beat Wawrinka, Berdych, and Cilic, he's got to be the favorite, heavy favorite in all of those matches. But at the same time, that his season hasn't gone that way. His season has been, judging by this season, he might throw in a disappointing loss and, you'd wonder about him again. So, but I would predict him to win this tournament and win that group and win this tournament.
And we got to remember, these are only best of, we're treating, I think we think of this as a major in a sense, but these are only best of three set matches that goes through the whole event, not just the round robin, through the final. So they're, when you have that many of a sample size going on, the results could prove interesting here depending on that format. So, we'll see, especially as it relates to Djokovic and what he has at stake there. Group B, the interesting thing to me with this one is you're getting, besides Federer and Murray, you've obviously two incredibly established stars in the game. You get Nishikori and Raonic, who made great leaps, I thought, this season. Even Raonic, I would go to say, Nishikori, it's clear what he did getting to the Open Final and actually reaching a number of other finals, winning, I think, four times. Raonic, to me, this 2014 for him, even though the titles may not have been there, I just thought that you could sense something a lot different with Raonic. I think he kind of emerged from that murk of, we tend to lump a lot of the young prospects, for many years into one group and say, when are they going to really, we think that they're all destined for great things at a certain time or another. But Raonic, I think, proved that this year. He finally got a win over Federer. It was really his first win over Federer, Djokovic, or Nadal. But I just sense something a lot different from him this year overall, and to put him with Nishikori in this group, those two have met actually a couple times this year at big events. There's quite a bit going on in this group beyond the big Federer-Murray match that's going to, really drum up the talk going to the round-robin stage.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Cilic on the other side and Nishikori and Raonic, can any of those guys make the semis. You know, that would be, this is their first appearance in this tournament. They've had the best years of their career. Now, can they, you know, I wouldn't expect any of them to win this tournament. Can they, for any of them to make a semi, that would be a big, you know, that would be a pretty good consolidation of their season, to, you know, to pull off a couple wins over top players here. I don't know whether that's going to happen. And I agree. You know, Raonic is a guy who, to me, his success this year, it shows that, again, how much his serve matters, in that I don't feel like he's that much better than he was. But with his serve, he almost doesn't have to get that much better. It's almost like a matter of time before, it's almost inevitable with that serve that his ranking goes up. So in that sense, I think he's shown that that shot and his game, you know, whatever his overall game is, he has staying power. And, you know, whether he can eventually beat the very best guys consistently, I don't know. But he, you know, he's definitely established himself as top 10, and his improvement has been pretty steady for the last 4 years.
Yeah, and I think you look beyond those two. Of course, Federer and Murray are next on the docket here. So, you know, Murray, I think, is equally as interesting a case as perhaps Cilic or so, where you have a guy who has played really outstanding tennis recently, winning three titles this fall. Of course, it should be said none of those were the Masters titles, and but you know, Murray really, I think, salvaged a season where we didn't really know where it was going. He reached the French Open semis, of all places. That was his best result as a slam. You know, I think this fall for him has been really a return to what we've kind of come to expect from Murray. And, you know, he hasn't won a World Tour final. He obviously hasn't won it when it's been played in London. And he made a big push in the year just to get to this tournament. He didn't play it last year because of a back surgery, had to pull out. So to me, there is, you know, a substantial amount at stake for Murray. I think he would absolutely love to really end this year on such a high note. This effectively, you know, is going to be his major, if he goes on to win it, for example. But, you know, to me, Murray has really just as much to play for, I think, as anybody else in this event. And it's going to be interesting to see how strong his form is after such a great fall.
Yeah, I thought his run this fall was one of the highlights of the season on either tour. You know, that was sort of the way the tour was meant to be played. All the top guys playing each week, fighting for a place in this type of tournament. You know, that was sort of the original idea of the pro tours, and that's not the way it normally happens. But Murray wanted to be in this tournament. He wanted to get himself back. He said he really wanted to get himself back into the top eight for seeding purposes for next year, and he did that. And really almost reestablished himself in the top four. And, you know, it showed that he's still a top-tier player. I think the next step, I think a big match for him here will be against Federer. He's had a couple disappointing losses to Federer at this tournament when the crowd may or may not have been for him, may have been actually his home crowd may have been a little bit more for Federer. And they were matches where you thought he was going to finally overcome Federer here, and he hasn't. And I think this year, I think in 2013, he kind of passed Federer by. And then in 2014, Federer kind of changed that around and he passed Murray again. I think this is an important moment for next year between them, you know, who sort of has the psychological advantage. I think Murray getting a win over Federer at this tournament would be a big deal for him.
Yeah, and I think for as it relates to Federer, I mean, it would be just as important win in some ways. I think for Federer, you look at what's left for him. There is a lot left for him. There's this tournament and there's the Davis Cup final, of course. And, you know, really depending on how it all shakes out, this, you know, in retrospect, this year, this sort of reawakening year for Federer after last year could really be seen, you know, not necessarily from a major title standpoint, of course, but it could be seen as one of the best years of his career if he were to say win this term, win the Davis Cup, and, you know, really just shed a lot of that talk about him really not being able to contend with Nadal, Djokovic, and Murray, as you say, who really had a strong, 2013. So for Federer, I think this is really so much to play for as well.
Yeah, I think Federer has done everything this year except win the big one. He lost that fifth set in the Wimbledon final. He's shown sort of promise at Wimbledon and the U.S. Open, and then hasn't quite pulled it off. Hasn't come through when he did. And I think I felt the same way about his loss to Raonic in Paris. Suddenly he was contending for number one, and then he lost to Raonic for the first time. So to me, these, especially the Davis Cup, this tournament, and especially the Davis Cup, will be a chance for him to make this, to do the thing he hasn't done this year, which is really win the big match that he wants. I think he's done everything else but that. So that's, I think also like Wawrinka, Federer is thinking, he's thinking about this tournament. He has a chance to finish number one, but he's also even more, just as motivated by getting ready for Davis Cup.
It should be quite good stuff here. We know a couple of the matches. I'll just mention what has been announced for the schedule up to this point. It starts on Sunday, actually. Murray with the afternoon slate gets that prime spot. Nishikori, Murray, Federer, Raonic at night. And then on Monday, you're going to get Wawrinka, Berdych afternoon, Djokovic, Cilic at night. So that's, the four first singles matches that we know of. I just wanted to close talking a little about where this season-ending championship stands from a physical location perspective, actually. In London, it's been there for a few years now. I know it's going to be there next year, but this is not a tournament that's tethered to there, because it has to be. It's been moved around many times, had many names, it's been in many cities. And we just saw the WTA finals, go to Singapore. This is their first year there. And, these events here, sort of at the whims of the tours, at the, it has followed the money in the past. But London has seemed a pretty good fit. I mean, it's tough to argue with a place like that, the kind of interest it has in the sport. And it's a very natural fit, of course, coming off of where the tour schedule ends in Paris to go, just up the channel indoors to London here. I guess maybe just want your thoughts on really how London has, how London has been. Do you want to see this tournament be moved around at all, any point in the future? Is there any sort of opinion you have on that?
Yeah, I think London has been great. It would be easy to keep it there. That would be the easiest thing to do. I think it's probably been the best there, best received and best attended and best media coverage there since it was in New York as the Masters 30 years ago. But the tradition, I think the tradition that was established since then has been that this tournament moves. The other tournaments, the other Grand Slams are about the being in one place. They're always played in the same place. They're an event in one place. This tournament's tradition is that it's moved around, and I think it should move again. I could see, something in South America, or it would be harder. It required changing the schedule around a little bit. It wouldn't be as easy to come out of Paris and go somewhere in say South America, or if it was back in North America or somewhere else. I could even see it being on a different surface, clay. They've had it on hard courts because that's an easy transition from indoor hard, and most of the tour is on hard courts, but there's no reason why it couldn't be on a different surface. That would be interesting. I think tennis as an international game, it should spread this. I feel like it should spread itself around in a tournament that it can, and this is one of those places where it can. So, it would be tough to leave London, and maybe it wouldn't even be as big as London, which would be unfortunate, but I still think it's worth keeping that idea of moving this tournament around.
Yeah, we'll see. Very good. Good. We will catch up, Steve and I, after the or during the World Tour Finals next week. We'll be in touch, see what's happened since then, look ahead, and hope you return then to the Tennis.com podcast. Thank you for listening once again. I'm Ed McGrogan for Steve Tigner.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.